joining us today, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your co-host, Laura Benson, and today I'm so excited to have Rebecca Leonard joining me. Rebecca is the owner of Elucidate LLC, a compliance consulting company, and is also the Vice President Director of Compliance for a $6 billion community bank in Montana. Rebecca graduated magna cum laude from Chapman University with a bachelor's degree in organizational leadership. She attended the American Bankers Association Compliance School in 2003 and has held her CRCM designation since 2006. So welcome, Rebecca, to Banking Matters.
Thank you. Hello. I feel old.
I mean, I wasn't going to say it, but I was still in high school during all that. But oh, well, you're such a joy to talk with, so I'm really happy to have you on the podcast. So why don't you just start off by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into banking?
Sure. Thank you very much. I'm just thrilled to be here and to be joining you and to see you. Laura and I have a history of being in banking together, and it's just really exciting to be a part of this. And the way I usually like to introduce myself, like if I was at a cocktail party, I'd go up to somebody and I'd say, "Hi, I'm Rebecca Leonard, and I love compliance." Kind of watch.
We're a special breed, aren't we?
We are. We are a special breed. But it's the honest to goodness truth. You know, I have been doing this for a really long time. My entire career has been involved in compliance in some way or other, and I really do enjoy it. I think a lot of it is the puzzle solving of it. You know, we have to kind of act like Sherlock Holmes and get to the bottom of things and figure things out. And that's very appealing to me. So I started in banking. I got into banking because I liked the banker's hours and the fact that I could dress up. Honest to goodness, that's really what it comes down to. When I was, you know, in college and kind of working towards that sort of thing, I thought banking was a reputable career and a long-lasting career. And so I first got my feet wet. Actually, before I ever got into a bank, I worked for a private lending institution. My husband was in the Navy, and we catered to providing private loans to military members. And in hindsight, I can see that that company was actually very UDAP-y.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so that kind of got me started as, I don't know if this is doing right by service members. And I didn't work there for very long, really wanted to get into a bank. So eventually when I did get into a bank, I started in a branch atmosphere. And as many of you bankers know, when you work in a branch, you wear customer service teller, loan processor, loan booker, loan reviewer, all of those hats. And I just loved it. I loved learning the why behind all these things that we had to do. And so when I got into compliance, I actually took the compliance officer position back in 2001. So that's how long I've been actually officially doing compliance. It was just like a smorgasbord of information to just gobble up and consume. And you learn every day. I'm still learning every day, even now, serving as the director of compliance now is where the career trajectory has taken me. And it's just been a very, very enjoyable ride.
That's awesome. And, you know, with being in banking for so long, especially in compliance since 2001, I'm sure you've seen a lot of things going on, especially with, you know, Dodd-Frank. That's probably the biggest reform that we've had since 2001. And I'm sure that was a huge headache. Thankfully for me, I got into banking right after that. So I don't know anything else. And I think that that's kind of a blessing in its own way.
Sure. And I see people coming into banking now, and it's so involved from where it used to be. I still have an ABA article where we made the headline, that is compliance folks made the front page, the cover of this ABA magazine, and it said the year of the compliance geek. And that was in 2006.
Oh, wow.
And now it's just that much more. So I've seen a real evolution in the compliance industry about how valuable compliance voices are and how they're coming to the table more and more. So that's been exciting. You know, new folks coming into it now don't have that historical perspective. So when I give some different training presentations, I like to give a little bit of the backstory because it just helps to frame where we are now.
It really does. And it seems like a lot of people that get started in banking, like the ones that really like the compliance aspect, it's like it just chooses them. Like we just naturally gravitate towards it because I'm a why person. I want to know the why behind everything. Yes. And so it's like compliance just chose me. Like I didn't really like decide when I started working in a bank. I was like, I want to be a lender and like talk with people. But then here I am in compliance and I love it.
Right. It is a natural skill set that we have that we none of us ever aspired to do this. And yet here we are.
Yeah, here we are. And you've always had a way about making compliance fun. I know that about you. But today we have the pleasure of talking about someone's, or I guess everybody's favorite part of banking, which is compliance exams, right?
Sure.
Not or usually. Or as I like to call them, the four-letter word. Because
yeah, usually not synonymous with fun.
Right. But you have to do them. So how many compliance exams have you been through?
Seven compliance exams in my career. Yeah. Wow. And I've seen a real evolution in them and how they've come about. And what they are now is much different from my very first one in the mid-2000s. That's for sure. And it's been for the better. It's a good thing now.
And have they all been with the same regulator?
All FDIC.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to have you walk us through exactly what it is that you do to prepare a bank for a compliance exam, because I know you've been a compliance officer and now you're a director. And so, of course, that comes with a lot more responsibility when exams come. So, yeah, just love to have you walk us through what you do to prepare your bank.
Sure. Sure. So before I get into the actual mechanics of it, I just have to share how my my philosophy has changed about exams in the first place. So, you know, early on in my career and for a long time, I just thought, I just got to get through it. I just got to survive. You know, it's a little bit like the Survivor show. Outlast, outperform, outwit. That's what it felt like. And so I would almost like cram on things, you know, to get stuff ready for those. And I've really come to a different perspective on that. And that is, and I don't want to sound scary on this, but to always be preparing for a compliance exam. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that, because I know that that sounds highly intimidating. So yeah. I also, yeah, I had to come
it
to a realization.
It does sound very stressful. Freak out. It's like a, you know, fire drill in the months leading up to it.
Right. Exactly. So no, instead it is just to be in a constant mindset of what might an examiner be looking for in this, and how can I bake that into the cake in the work that I do every day, in the reviews that I am performing, monitoring, in the procedures that I'm helping to develop, the policy that I'm submitting to the board? How am I always having a mindfulness towards an exam? So that perspective has been an important shift, because there's been a shift in how exams are even conducted by the regulatory agencies too. So if you'd permit me to just kind of go down that rabbit trail for just a moment to kind
absolutely.
Of give that background information. So first and foremost, sometimes I think bankers and even compliance officers get kind of caught in the trees and fail to step back and see the forest. And that is our industry, what we are doing for careers as bankers, is dealing in the commodity of other people's money. So we are not selling a widget or producing a widget or selling something else. We are handling people's money. And if we come to that perspective about how we need to do that in a proper way, in a safe way, in a fair way, that already starts to put us in the right frame of mind for what we need to do. What is at stake for all of this? So that's why I always start there. And then I just kind of look at what is a compliance exam really trying to get to? And I don't have to divine these things ourselves. The regulators actually tell us. And that is a document put out by the FFIEC. And I know this sounds, I'm going to use acronyms. You're all with me in banking, right? But that is the Federal Financial Institutions Examination Council. And it is all the regulatory agencies coming together and saying, let's act on a common ground and try to have some consistency in our exams. And in 2017, they came out with the Consumer Compliance Rating System. Google it. There is a document out there that includes a chart for where you will fall as they examine different things. And it is very, very helpful to just begin with that for that preparation anytime. And don't wait until you get the entry letter that you have an exam coming up, a compliance exam, but go take a look at it now, because it helps you to see, oh, that's what they're going to be looking at for consumer protection, for board and management oversight, for complaint management. These are the different things that they're going to be rating on. And so it's a bit like seeing the playbook of, I don't want to say your opponent because I don't want to take that sort of connotation, but seeing the playbook of the team that you're going to be, you know, running the football against, so to speak. So very, very helpful in that. The next thing to keep in mind is the other four-letter word, which is risk. Everything now is about risk management. And some people in the audience here that might be joining me might be compliance officers, or maybe they're more senior level management. If you're here listening, thank you so much for being a part of this, because this is right up your alley for risk management. You know this, you do it every single day as you manage the bank. So when an examiner is coming into the bank, they are not there to do the compliance job on behalf of the bank. And I know that sounds a little harsh, but we have to be realistic about that. They're not coming in to perform all the necessary reviews. Mm-hmm. That is a shift. Back in the day, there used to be a tremendous amount of transactional testing that was done. And now, to be quite frank, the regulatory agencies, the examining bodies, they just don't have the resources to do that anymore. We know hiring crunches, right, in our organizations. The examiners, the agencies, they have the same sort of issue. So they have to really be laser focused on what they're going to do. And so it's about finding where the high risk areas are and then looking more towards that. Another thing coloring all of this is just all of the changes that we've had in the industry, in the banking industry in the past 20 years. It's kind of hard to think of it this way and to remember it this way, Laura, but you know, it was only about 20 years ago that we were just getting websites going.
Wow.
When you think about, and now we have mobile deposit, we have AI coming into the picture, FinCEN relationships, all sorts of new types of products and complexities that technology allows. And it's all just too much. So don't expect an examiner to come in and transaction test everything and to do that function for you. No, they're coming in instead to see how the compliance management system is being managed.
And sometimes you get a little bit of tips and tricks of the trade. And if you keep your eyes on some of the stuff that's published,
right,
you know, if you're staying on top of that, you're going to see what those hot topics are. And then you can kind of take that back to your bank. Because like you were saying, it's always so risk focused now. And so Yes. You really want to know what the hot buttons are, you know, like, okay, overdraft is a big thing. Junk fees, like, let's make sure we have that all buttoned up before they come in, and just Right. Keeping tabs on all the things that are changing.
Right. So examiners want to see that you are keeping up on these things and looking at them yourself. So let's get into the nuts and bolts now of preparing for exam. You got an exam entry letter. You're like, oh boy, here we go. Game on.
Here we go.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of misperception that the exam starts when they arrive on site, but it starts weeks and months before that, depending on the size of your institution, certainly weeks before. And there's going to be pre-exam interviews, and they are extensive. And the whole reason for that is to find out the risks within your organization. So they'll be asking, what new products have you added? What sort of staff turnover have you had? And these initial intake interviews could last a couple of hours, and they might seem incredibly intrusive. But again, they're all to help determine where the risk pattern is going to go. So there's a little clue for you. If they ask a lot about a particular topic for overdraft practices or something like that, you can be sure then that that's going to be something that they look at if they begin to hone in on something right away. Mm-hmm. So that's the first indicator right there. So it's a very important process, and it's a very worthwhile process. So just go with it, because that's how they're going to tailor it appropriately for your risk. But there's a little bit of a lesson there too in modeling that for our own internal processes. So this is where I want to make the correlation with always preparing for an exam. And that is when we are doing reviews within an institution, that is the compliance function, we need to kind of ask some of those pointed questions too. What turnover have you had in your department? What has changed? What have you identified yourself that has maybe been problematic? And use those things to even risk, tailor the risk for your own internal reviews. Mm-hmm. It's a great model to make sure that your resources are being appropriately managed too within the compliance department too.
Yeah, making sure you definitely keep that risk assessment up to date. Make sure that you're tweaking your monitoring schedule throughout the year to kind of hit all of those higher risk areas. And it's a moving target.
Yes. Now, one of the challenges in all of this, whether it's to an examiner or even internally, is to self-identify your own weaknesses. Mm-hmm. As humans, we don't like to admit when something is a weakness. We like to portray our strengths, especially to examiners. I get it. But there is so much power in self-identifying where a weakness is and then taking corrective steps on your own to fix it. So I always, always like to tell everybody, please don't try to keep skeletons hidden in the closet from examiners. And I liken it to this analogy. If your own body, your own health, if you take your temperature and find that you have a fever, you need to take medicine to fix it, right? Or things are just going to continue to get worse and you're going to get sicker and sicker. The compliance function is very much like that, taking the temperature of the problems and the issues that might be going on, that might be kind of under the surface, just starting that low-grade fever. And if you self-identify it and take the medicine, take the corrective action, that is indicative of good health. And examiners see it the exact same way, self-identifying, self-correcting, even if you have to give money back to a customer and give some reimbursement or restitution, that is not going to be a critical area in an exam if you are doing that yourself. Instead, it's going to be seen as the sign of a healthy compliance management system, because none of us are
perfect. Compliance management system is working the way it should.
Exactly right. It's doing what it is supposed to do, and they will see that favorably. And in fact, if examiners notice that you have self-identified an issue, they won't cite it as a violation for the same thing. If you are taking corrective action, they will say they already identified it, they're taking corrective action. And unless it's a really out of control issue, they will not then cite it as a violation. So there's a motivation right there for you to self-correct on your own right too.
That's great advice.
So you said earlier that you love to ask why. Mm-hmm. And that's the hallmark of a very good compliance professional. And that's another thing that we incorporate into a compliance management system is always asking why. However, in the compliance world, it's given a kind of a nice fancy little name, and that is root cause analysis. So when you're finding and those self-identification of issues, you have to keep asking why. Why did this happen? I had a Federal Reserve examiner once give some great advice, and she said, when you're trying to get to the root of a finding, tell yourself you need to ask why at least 5 times or until you can't ask why anymore. And I thought that was
Where
really...
Where did the 5 come from?
I have no idea. Huh. I have no idea. I think it was to be a little over the top. So, because you always want to ask maybe the first why, maybe get into the second when, and then after that, the feeling starts to become a little more intrusive and the person you're asking starts to become a little more defensive. And so I think she was purposely saying, you have to keep pushing that a little bit more to the fifth degree. I think that's where she got.
Yeah, that. I can follow that logic.
Yeah. So just to run through an example of something like that, you end up with, let's say, a truth in savings violation because something was misdisclosed. So you come along, whether this is, in, by the way, this is exactly what examiners are going to do. So they might go to the fifth degree on Five Whys. So you want to kind of emulate that, you know, in your own internal monitoring. So you ask, okay, why was this wrong? Well, it's system generated and the system printed it wrong. Okay, why did the system print it wrong? Well, because we had an update change and our document production system inadvertently changed a parameter. Oh, now a lot of people would stop right there and go, okay, that's on the vendor. But no, we have to keep going further and say, why was that not checked? Mm-hmm. And I've lived this in exam myself too, for part of change management, which is one of the things that examiners will look at. Why after the change, why wasn't it checked to confirm parameters were good? And taking that a little bit further than the next, we don't have the staff for that. Okay, so now this is a staffing and a resource issue, which is another part of compliance management system, is making sure that you have adequate resources. So mm-hmm. every little layer that is unpeeled gets deeper and deeper into the real root cause of the compliance management system, which really could boil down to inadequate resources and you need to hire somebody else.
And then also maybe check your procedures to make sure that you have in there that if there is an update that we review it within a certain period of time to make sure that
correct. Yeah. Or it could go down another path of inadequate training, that the person who was tasked with following the procedure to double check something didn't know exactly what they needed to check. And so it was a training issue. So it'll always get down to the nitty gritty, what you need to correct and not just put the band-aid on it.
And that's a perfect example of how compliance is a puzzle.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That we are a puzzle. An enigma.
Right.
Very good. So when you get through an exam and they look at these things, which by the way, they will look at three specific categories. And if you check out the Consumer Compliance Rating System document, it will name these three categories, which is board and management oversight, your overall compliance program, and then any violations of law and consumer harm. And there are little subcategories in all of this. And this is exactly what will end up in a final compliance exam report, is these individual indicators or these, excuse me, individual criteria that are being examined. So another thing that I also like to point out to compliance professionals, and this is good for senior management to hear too, is that a compliance exam is way bigger than the compliance person or the compliance department. It goes far, far deeper into all of that, into the board and management oversight and support, and how well are even the staff members reporting complaints in. It is a holistic, entire organization type matter going on here. So it, as somebody prepares for a compliance exam, compliance officer, I'm going to speak to you here just from the heart. You cannot bear on your shoulders this entire burden alone. It is not yours to bear alone. So there's always an important responsibility that needs to be there. Absolutely, compliance officers and compliance departments have responsibilities on their shoulders, but their responsibility is to identify weaknesses, also identify strengths, and report those things on to management. Then it is up to management to take those findings and those recommendations and decide what to do with them. Mm-hmm. So let the responsibilities fall in the correct place. For a long time early in my career, I bore on my shoulders the responsibility I felt for the entire organization's compliance function. And that is not healthy at all. So if I make a recommendation to a senior manager, and senior manager, if you're joining me today and compliance is making a recommendation to you, it's up to you to follow it or not. Same thing with exam recommendations. It's your management choice. But then you get to experience whatever the consequences or the rewards are of that decision, that risk-based decision. So I have certainly had times when I've made recommendations to management, they've not followed it. And I say, okay, that's your choice to make. And I sleep fine at night.
There you go.
Yeah. That's it funny. All interweaves together, and everybody, it's a team. You all work together. It's never combative. I don't get offended if management chooses not to follow my recommendation because that's their risk choice to make. But again, I don't also make it my responsibility. Yeah, it's a good teamwork.
That's so true. And that's why it's such an important thing to make sure that you're tracking these recommendations and their response of whether or not they do want to implement it or not. And hopefully they're providing a reason with why they don't want to, because it could come back to bite them in the butt.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yep, exactly. Document, 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 all the way around. You expect
that's
that
what
of
we always
your
say, right?
Yep,
if you expect it of your staff. It didn't happen.
Yep, and you do it within your own department too. You document everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've gone on quite a bit about exam management.
Yeah.
Do you have any other questions for me?
So many good key takeaways. And I really hope that, you know, people listening really take this to heart, because when you have someone that's been in compliance as long as you have, that has the experience of all levels of compliance, you know, you really have a lot of knowledge there to share with our listeners. And so we really appreciate that. And hopefully they will make their next exam their best exam by taking these, you know, key pieces of information that you've shared with us today to heart. So thank you so much for sharing all of that insight. But before we let you go, we always like to ask our guests, what is one piece of advice that you would like to leave our listeners with today? And I know kind of this whole podcast was about advice, but is there anything else you would like to share with us?
Again, I'm going to speak directly to the compliance staff who might be listening. And that is, my advice is to know your value. Many times we, whether inadvertently or purposely, sometimes we are feeling devalued in our organizations, that we're a cost center, or that we just are the department of no, or we're told how we can't do things. And I know for sure, for a fact, that so many compliance officers don't like that connotation, because you want to help the organization. You want to provide ways that things can be done in a compliant way. So I really just want to give some advice of encouragement to know that you are doing a fantastic job in your organization, and you are very valued. And senior managers, if you're listening to me, please make a point of letting your compliance staff know how valuable they are, because they are in the business of asset protection and asset retention. So that's my,
yes,
my good news advice.
Yeah, we're your friends. We're not auditors.
Yep.
That's the point I always try to make when I'm trying to break the shell of, you know, someone that doesn't, you know, a management, you know, person that doesn't really want to open up a little bit. It's like, hey, I'm here to help you. I'm your friend. We're not audit. We're compliance.
That's right. We're on the same team. Yeah.
But yeah, that's great advice. So thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Yes.
Rebecca, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. We appreciate you being on today. And for our listeners out there, we're always looking for new guests on the podcast. So if you're interested in being a guest, please reach out to us at info@compliancealliance.com. And one of the hosts will reach out to you to line something up. So again, thank you, Rebecca, for joining us today. And that's Banking Matters.